I was on his committee. But more importantly, I referred James Foley to a place called the Care Center in Holyoke. It's an alternative education program for adolescent mothers, mostly Puerto Rican, who have dropped out of the school system there. And Jim Foley taught English to Spanish speakers there. That's who Jim was. He was compassionate. He was always trying to do the right thing.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. Martina Spada, the great award-winning poet and writer, professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He's written numerous books, including The Republic of Poetry, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. His new collection is titled Vivas to Those Who Have Failed. And that does it for our broadcast. We have two job openings, Director of Finance and Operations and Director of Development. Go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. I'm thanking you for being with us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. And here we are. You have found our weekly public affairs show here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. We do things a little differently than any other non-commercial station on the dial, and that's why you love us. That's why you're tuned in right now. And if you didn't know where you were, you are here, 89.3 FM, or if you're listening on the web, it is from our website, WHFR.FM. And of course, there's numerous multiple apps out there. The one we recommend for free is iTunes Radio, which you can download on your smartphone or your laptop or what have you. And just choose us, please, as one of your favorite stations there. It makes it easy to get to us the next time around. But the first time, just type in WHFR in their little search window, and it'll find us. And here we are. We have latest check, and we can check on this. It's definitive. We have over 4,000 listeners every day via the internet, and that means even a lot of people in the Detroit area that are outside of our 8 to 10 mile range are listening to us. Because they can, and they can listen in many different places in many different ways. So anyway, our story for each hour is local news and alternative views for Dearborn, Michigan, and the surrounding area. And there's a lot of things happening. Oh, boy. He reaches over grabbing the newspapers in our area, in our world, of course. The state address by the governor has been covered on all the other media, so good. I don't have to cover that. That's always great. And looking for a few thousand other stories here, I wanted to do a sort of tribute, first of all, to some of the heroes of the water crisis. Are there heroes? Yes, the people that actually revealed the water crisis, the people that lobbied, had press conferences, and were ridiculed, and the people that got the story out that finally made our government in Michigan do something. And there's a couple of people that really, really deserve a lot of credit. Here is, first of all, a story that was just placed on MichiganRadio.org yesterday about one of the heroes. And one of the heroes is a person not in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency, but he is sort of their expert on lead contamination of water supplies around the U.S. And this is the story, and I'll play the clip, which is 6 minutes long, that actually comes from Michigan Radio. And again, it was placed 11 o'clock last night. And here is the story from their reporter, whose name didn't get included, and I'm sorry, on the printout that I have here. But I think it's probably Lindsay Smith. She's the interviewer for the EPA's Miguel Del Toro. And that's D-E-L and then capital T-O-R-A-L. And Lindsay says, I've been trying to interview the EPA's Miguel Del Toro since early July 2015, when a copy of his interim report on high lead levels in Flint's water landed in my inbox. So, you know, thank you, Michigan Radio. You're one of the first news services in Michigan to pick up on this and to cover it, which is one of the reasons I love non-commercial media, because they don't hold back. When they got the facts, they'll go with them, okay? Even if it embarrasses the powers that be, as it did in this case. In fact, as it says here, Lindsay says, his report was the first time any official had publicly implied that there could be a serious lead problem in Flint's water. But back then, because the report wasn't finalized, the EPA wouldn't talk about it on the media. And behind the scenes, Del Toro's boss, EPA's Region 5 administrator, her name, Susan Hedman, H-E-D-M-A-N, she apologized about the way the report was leaked to the press. However, it's interesting, just yesterday afternoon, according to Lindsay's report here, Hedman announced that she's just submitted her resignation. So she just resigned yesterday. Rather than backing up and getting that approval for a report, she criticized Miguel Del Toro and held it back and tried to run it down. Or it has no importance because it hasn't officially gone through channels. You know, of course, my personal opinion, and remember, all opinions on the new WHFR Journal show here on WHFR are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, not faculty, staff, administrators, students, or Board of Trustees members. However, my opinion is people are dying here, or people are slowly being killed and poisoned, and you speed up the process. You don't hold it back, okay? If the interim report came out, well, make it the official report quick, okay? Because you don't hold back on something like this. Maybe that's a lesson for state government. And have they learned it yet? I'm not so sure. So here is the phone interview with EPA's Miguel Del Toro, done by Michigan Radio's Lindsay Smith. So take a listen here. One of my, I think, the great heroes in this is Mr. Del Toro.
But you've known this was potentially an issue for a while now. What's it been like for you to watch the news?
Pretty easy. I think that after a while, especially starting in October, I've been focused on the task force activities. Prior to that, I don't think it was anything I didn't know. So,
Leanne Walters called the EPA. How did you find out about her situation, and what did you think was going on?
Well, Leanne first called Jennifer Crooks, one of my coworkers. Jennifer referred her to me because I've been working with lead for a couple decades. Once I saw that, it was a high result. 104, spoke to Leanne, and it was obviously high, and I said, don't drink the water, but not any kind of alarm or anything. We see sometimes homes that have a high result where there's not problems in other places. But I did, talk with her a lot, and then right on the heels of that, of course, we had another higher result, 397. So throughout the process, we had a ton of calls back and forth. She really wanted to understand things, and so I went through essentially explaining that some homes could have lead pipes. She had talked about having plastic pipes in her home. And so I said, well, there could be lead in the service line. And so eventually we got to corrosion control, as how the leaching of lead is stopped from the interior plumbing and the lead service lines. And we spent a good deal of time on that. All throughout this time frame, I'm assuming that Flint had corrosion control in place. So at that time, it wasn't on my radar, so to speak, that they didn't have the treatment in place.
When you found out that Flint wasn't using corrosion control treatment, what was your reaction to that?
Well, actually, Leanne was the one that found out. after we had been talking, she would do her own investigative work, and she actually mentioned that she had talked to someone, and they mentioned they did not have corrosion control. And even though she had told me that, I just, in my head, I was thinking, that's not possible. You know, I couldn't believe that was true. I thought there's a misunderstanding here or some kind of miscommunication. But in getting to know her and in getting to know, you know, how quickly she was picking things up and information she was providing was accurate, I thought I'd better look into this. And, of course, you know, we were told by the DEQ that they had a corrosion control treatment program in place. But she had put that doubt in my mind, and the wording there was a little corrosion control treatment program. And it kind of read funny because typically you just say corrosion control, and that's generally known to be treatment. So started digging further and pressing DEQ, and finally, you know, they acknowledged that there was no treatment in place.
Do you feel like they misled you before? I realize there's nuances in this language.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I don't know what anybody's intention is, and so I can't assign intent. But, you know, clearly they did not have treatment in place. I don't know what the intent was in that email.
So at some point, Mark Edwards gets involved here. He does a 30-bottle, like a sequential sample for Walters in April, I think it was. And
right.
When I talked to Edwards, he said when he got those results back, one of the first people he called was you, and it was late at night. Do you remember that night and sort of seeing those were the particular numbers that were, you know, in the thousands of parts per billion?
Well, okay, so it goes back to the day that I found out about the lack of treatment, and you know, I was pretty stunned to find out. That was on a Friday, and then I was out at the Walters home that Monday, that following Monday. And yes, I mean, the results were the absolute highest I'd ever seen. But I think one of the things that should be pointed out here, though, is I looked at the plumbing. It was all plastic, as Ms. Walters had said, and so that was a contradiction from what I had been told previously by the DEQ. I'd received a call that the lead was coming from her plumbing and that that she needed to hire a plumber, you know, to take care of that. So when I got there, I took a look at that, and it was, in fact, all plastic, the valves, the pipes, the fittings, couplings, they were all plastic, a couple of minor brass connectors, but nothing that would produce the levels of lead that we found. And so, you know, the numbers were pretty staggering, and so, I mean, that just, those numbers blew my mind. I couldn't believe them.
So I called the DEQ to ask him about, you know, pre-flushing and some of the things you wrote about it. I thought, wow, these might affect other cities in Michigan. And that's when he told me that anybody who was worried about the lead in water could relax. I was curious if you read that and what you thought about that, if you did.
Well, it was pretty shocking to see some of these things. But I think looking at them in hindsight, people maybe that didn't understand is the only thing I could think of. Because clearly, if you did understand, first of all, you know, it's just inconceivable that somebody would not require the treatment in the first place. So that was kind of the biggest shock, if you will. Following that, some of the statements, it was really surprising to see a government agency saying the things that they were saying, I guess.
Do you feel like a hero at all?
I'll tell you, not really. You know, it's taken a long time. I don't know that, you know, you could say that.
And that was the recording of the interview that we believe the reporter from Michigan Radio I do know that the interview was with Lindsay Smith at Michigan Radio, and she interviewed EPA's Miguel Del Toro. Definitely one of my heroes, too, I think, in this. Number two hero I wanted to mention was mentioned in her full story, which I'm not going to read the full story. Again, you can go to michiganradio.org and read the full story that I'm paraphrasing here. But you realize that, well, first of all, the do-nothing Flint mayor up until the last election was a Dane Walling. Now, again, you can't blame the mayor or even the city council of Flint too much, but he was kind of a mouthpiece for, oh, everything's safe, no problem here. Even though the elected officials, you remember, or you should remember, have no power to do anything in Flint because they're under a Governor Snyder appointed emergency manager. And what that means is he can do whatever he wants to. He is literally the dictator of Flint. He is the one that approved the switching from Detroit water to Flint River water without the right safety protections. Why isn't he resigning? Why isn't he fired by Governor Snyder? You know, that's my question. I asked it last week too. I mean, as long as you're going to get rid of the head of the Michigan DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, yeah, right, pure Michigan, right? Well, that campaign is shot. Yep, back to the drawing boards, because all over the whole country, it's a top story on the news, and not a good one for the government of Michigan. Although, as I quoted, I heard a couple stories on national news that blamed the former mayor when he had no power, even though, yes, he was a mouthpiece for the governor, in effect. But in fact, it's the governor's emergency financial manager that approved all this. Even the city of Flint, after the reports started coming in, the elected city council members voted to go back to Detroit Water months ago. Oh, no, there's no problem. And the emergency financial manager just wouldn't do anything, even though the elected representatives of the people got the story early and they said, we got to go back. No, no problem. And, of course, probably the worst mouthpiece was the mouthpiece, that is the public relations person, the press coordinator of the MDEQ, Brad Werfel. And what's interesting about that is that, he was fired or he resigned too. But why did Snyder wait so long? Get this. Werfel's wife was Snyder's own head of press relations. His wife. Now, she's resigned too, just recently. And, because guilt by association or whatever, or maybe she was giving the wrong advice there. Also, as long as we're talking about resignation, I got one more hero to mention, or two heroes to mention. Yesterday was the last day for Governor Snyder's chief of staff. The guy's in charge of all the big players up there that advise the governor. And his name is Dennis Muchmore. I can make a joke, maybe it's much less after what he didn't do. Now, he did announce way back in, as they say, the relatively sedate month of last August, 2015, that he was going to retire. Okay. He's going to work at some big business company in Michigan. But he was responsible there. And, of course, everything sort of blew up in the papers and elsewhere last September. Although really nothing was done until December for 4 months, clearly, although we think Governor Snyder and or the MDEQ, certainly the people of Flint and Mr. Del Toro knew much, much earlier than last September what the problem was. In fact, Dennis Muchmore, as of yesterday, Governor Snyder's chief of staff, who retired, he's been grilled a bit about what he knew. Who knew what already? And as a former employee of, get this, he was a former employee of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency himself. I don't know how many years back that was. But you'd think he'd know something. He'd advise the governor something about environmental protection. Well, he didn't. apparently, although he was advising the governor until just yesterday. But he told us he was going to retire way back last August. And so there's nothing suspicious here, is there?
No.
Well, another retirement that I think somebody, one of our listeners contacted me about last week is that I didn't cover, is that Dearborn. Here in Dearborn, we have a retirement. And but it's coming up in February. Our Dearborn City Clerk, Kathleen Buda, 64, will be retiring next month. Buda said that she has been contemplating the idea for the last year and decided the time is right. Her last day is set for February 16th. Now, if you'll remember, as the story says here from PressAndGuide.com, Buda's office was raided by the Michigan State Police in December as part of an embezzlement investigation. And she gave a quote to the paper, "I know people will be talking about the coincidence here." She says, "but I can't control that." Apparently, unquote, after working for 50 years of her life, she's ready to move forward. That's a positive statement for someone retiring. Quote, she says, "I've met so many people through my 21 years here and have felt very supported by the community." As directed by the city charter, Deputy Clerk Loa Isminger will become acting clerk through the end of next year. Now, I thought we got an election in November. Why can't we elect the new city clerk this November? There's plenty of time to get on the ballot, unless that's a misprint. But the end of next year would means that her term is all the way until 2017. He says Buda's four-year term would have ended January 1st, 2018. So does Lola Isminger get to continue all the way through then? You don't instantly go to the next big election to have a vote, I guess. That's probably our city charter. So a new person will be elected, I guess, in some sort of election. Whoever gets elected in November 2017 will then take office and replace the acting clerk on January 1st, 2018. So Kathleen Buda's retired. It had nothing to do with the water crisis in Flint, but yeah, people are saying that must have something to do with that embezzlement investigation. But just so you know, she's not escaping anything. If she was, if the investigation found that she was guilty of something, she can still be prosecuted, folks, as far as I know. What do I know about the law? I only live under it. Okay, back to the Flint water crisis. Hero number two that you should think about is the investigative reporter for the American Civil Liberties Union. You might know it as the acronym reference ACLU. Now, normally they take, they're a lobbyist group, but they're also a legal group, and they help champion causes where violations of civil rights and varieties of different kinds of civil justice issues. And they've hired an investigative reporter. And you might say, why does a group like this need an investigative reporter? Well, because, and I'll use the Sarah Palin term, although with a different meaning, the lamestream media, that is the commercial media, not the independent, non-commercial media, but the lamestream media seem reticent to take on issues of controversy. Primarily because they don't have the reporters. They don't have the full-time reporters, they don't have the time to dig into these stories to get the information because they're not being paid to do that. They're not being paid very much. Just like the two major weekly papers in Dearborn, Dearborn Press and Guide, Dearborn Times Herald, has no full-time reporters. Everybody who is putting the story in is working part-time. Oh, my goodness. So that's why they have no time. Part-timers have no time to do investigative stories. Kurt Guyette, name might be familiar to you if you read the Metro Times over the last, 8 or 10 years. He was the editor, and he wrote a lot of the great investigative stories for the Metro Times, the cover stories, if you will. And, of course, as editor, he could always make them the cover story. But, I mean, we're talking about 6,000-word reports digging really deep into the muck. Well, they used to call it, muckrakers. at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, but they were not digging into anything, you know, that's not appropriate. I mean, for the news. The news should find out and reveal what's going wrong in government from your elected officials. In fact, Thomas Jefferson, I believe that's the name I'm dropping here, one of our great historical forefathers and one of our presidents of this country, said that, you know, the fourth estate, as he called it, the fourth branch of government are the newspapers. And they will keep the other three branches, which is executive, legislative, and judicial, in balance. If anybody's corrupt anywhere, they will dig it up and they will reveal it. Important responsibility, but not guaranteed in the Constitution. Constitution says nothing about, other than freedom of the press, in an amendment, First Amendment. Doesn't say anything about the role of the press being essential in the functioning of this government. But, oh, yeah, it is. But under big business control and merging and everything for profit, we've lost those investigative reporters. We've lost the courage to dig into stories that matter. News and Free Press do not have full-time reporters in Lansing, even. They get the stories indirectly or make a phone call, or maybe they go up once every couple weeks whenever there's a stirring, which has been stirring maybe for months and they don't find out about. So it was Kurt Guyett, with his muckraking sensibility, that he's proven, if he's got the time and somebody will pay him, he's proven to get the results about the bad things that are happening in our government. And so I'm sure he's getting paid more, too, at ACLU. But can you imagine a separate group has got to hire an investigative reporter who's objective, by the way, who's digging for the facts, because the newspapers and the TV and the radio media, the lamestream media, are not getting it done. Of course, again, Sarah Palin, who's back in the news, you know, this week, oh my goodness, her reference is that the lamestream media are all liberal and all their stories are anti-conservatives, which, if you look at the popularity of the media, both conservative talk radio and also cable TV news, it's way overbalanced for conservative opinions. And that's what the people listened to. That's what the ratings show. That's what the people are listening to. Whether they should or not is not the question here. But I'm saying the influence of a few so-called liberal biased media is few and far in between. Their influence is few and far between. But congratulations to Kurt Guyett. And keep up that great work. And thank you, ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, which is a nonprofit, folks, and you can donate and support it if you feel this is something they should continue. Help pay Kurt Guyett's salary. There you go. The third hero. Well, by the way, the story from I guess there's four heroes in Flint. The first person to get the attention of the EPA's Miguel del Toro was Leanne Walters, and he mentioned her in that clip that I played for you back there, and a resident of Flint. And when he came up there and looked at her water, it was, as he said, in all of his history of testing water for lead, it was the worst he'd ever seen in his career, which I think he said was more than 10 years. One test he did at her house found more than 13,000 parts per billion. That's almost three times as much as what the EPA classifies as hazardous waste. And, okay. Congratulations to, but I mean, that person, any of you that find a problem with your water, your gas, your air, complain. Please call up the EPA if you have to. Can you imagine why would Leanne Walters have to complain to the federal government? Because nobody locally in Flint or in Lansing was taking up the cause. They didn't believe her, or they just were too busy on something else to act. Should I suggest it because she was poor? Or that she was perhaps, and I don't know for sure, not white. I don't know. But those questions have been raised already by other people, and I'm not sure they have any facts either. By the way, our press person for MDEQ, the spokesperson, that Brad Werfel I mentioned to you, he specifically at one point called Del Toro, one of our heroes here, a rogue employee. And of course he said that the media can relax. There's no problem in Flint. Oh my gosh. How can you get it so wrong? And the emails seem to indicate that he did a little bit of research and he still said these things. And Del Toro was not a rogue employee. He did an investigation, which was legal for him to do. He wrote an interim report, but it got released to the press. Whoops. But it was a true report. And of course, his boss was a little bit upset. Because I understand if there were problems with the interim report, and an interim report needs the review of others, perhaps, to double check the facts and make sure it's real. Don't want to scare anybody or unscare anybody. So it's good to check and double check. But in this case, there was no problem, was there? And it needed to get out quicker. So he wasn't a rogue employee. He was, and besides, what's wrong with a so-called whistleblower? Even if he was a rogue, whistleblowers should be loved and protected by law, and in most cases they're not. They usually get fired, or they have benefits taken away, or they get reassigned to a position in Siberia or something. Oh, that's Russia. I'm sorry. No, we would never do things like that in the United States, would we? No. I'm being satirical. Of course we wouldn't. But the third, fourth, because I put Leanne Walters in there as the third. The fourth hero. And I got this from the Arab American News, and thank you to the listener to the show that reminded me that they're a great news source locally on local stories. But of course, the Arab American newspaper, which is available many places in Dearborn, look for it, find out, call somebody for free. It's another free newspaper, along with the Metro Times, that, yes, you folks should get every week and read. Now, the Arab American News, I think I remember correctly, and the last time I had a copy, is about half in Arabic. But the first half is in English, so if you don't know Arabic, read the first half at least. And again, they do cover international and national and state and local community news right here in Dearborn. Well, one of their stories, and by the way, they have a website, which is ArabAmericanNews.com. Pretty obvious, right? ArabAmericanNews.com. And they point out, of course, it's a lot of the stories they feature prominent Arab Americans and stories of interest to Arab Americans from Arab communities around the world, of course, too. But here's one. It's all about the Iraqi immigrant doctor who saved Flint. Now, she's only one of many heroes here. But her name, and here's the story, which was just released yesterday on the ArabAmericanNews.com. Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, that's Hanna, H-A-N-N-A hyphen A-T-T-I-S-H-A. A-T-T-I-S-H-A, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, is an Iraqi immigrant, and she's being credited for blowing the whistle on the Flint water crisis. Her friend was a water expert who had worked for the Environmental Protection Agency when the District of Columbia encountered similar issues there more than a decade ago. When she told Hanna Atisha that she heard the city of Flint wasn't doing corrosion control, as it, quote-unquote, to prevent lead in aging pipes from leaching into the water supply, the doctor didn't need to be told twice about the gravity of the potential consequences. Through her work, Hanna Atisha, and again, that's her last name, her first name is Mona, had already heard complaints from Flint residents since officials switched the city's water supply from Lake Huron to the dirty Flint River in April 2014 as a cost-cutting measure. The water was brown, and it smelled and tasted bad. Residents reported developing rashes and eye irritations and had been advised to boil their water because of the presence of E. coli. The prospect of lead in the water made her realize urgent action was needed. Her response, she said, was to undertake, quote, the easiest research project I've ever done, unquote. The hospital routinely screened children who are the most vulnerable to lead exposure at ages 1 and 2 for the substance, monitoring levels among infants who may have ingested the neurotoxin through eating paint chips in their homes. That's possible in Detroit, even possible in some homes in Dearborn. Don't have the kids eating paint chips coming off the walls. Of course, that can happen accidentally. But because the older paint will have lead in it. Her research involved comparing the lead levels in samples taken before and after the switch in the water supply. What she found was incontrovertible. Nobody could contradict it. It was so true. The percentage of children in Flint with lead poisoning had doubled. And that's just, in a period, quick period after the switchover in 2014. Having uncovered the shocking data, Hannah Atisha took the unconventional step of sharing the findings at a September 2015 press conference flanked by medical colleagues. At that time, she was labeled an, quote, unfortunate researcher, unquote, and was accused of causing hysteria, probably by state government and the MDEQ. But of course, she was right. So just another direction. Another hero that had to jump in, who was not part of state government, not part of the federal government, although I think the EPA did. Hey, somebody made a report. They came on scene. They investigated. They had a report. Maybe it came out a little early for the bosses at the EPA. The boss from Region 5 who just yesterday resigned. Well, it sure made her look bad, didn't it? Finally. So congratulations to those people that work for the people of Flint in many different ways from many different groups that finally made this a public affair so that the public, the people, can put pressure on the powers that be to get something done. And the question is, what are we going to do? Well, now that the corrosive water has leached the lead from the pipes, it's disturbed, it's first of all, the Flint River water is not being used anymore. They're back to Detroit water, but the pipes are still leaching lead because the corrosion caused the flakes to start coming off, as I understand it. So all the pipes underground in Flint for water supply are going to have to be replaced. And that's going to take, I saw, $300 to $500 million of cost, and it's going to take 15 years at least. So how much bottled water you got out there, huh? They are collecting bottled water. Even the Metro Times recommends several organizations sending bottled water up there. Governor Snyder, as you might have caught, as part of his State of the State address Tuesday night, that he's asking the legislature for about $30 million to provide aid, basically bottled water, and money to pay the National Guard of Michigan to the troops to be assigned there and to set up distribution centers. I know, and to drop off things house to house too, because I noticed that they said, well, that's great. You got a distribution center. I don't have a car, said some people of Flint. I can't get down there. I'm supposed to carry, cases of bottled water back on my back through the streets for 10 or 15 miles. No, they have to pretty much do it door to door. It's about 35,000 residents left in Flint, which used to be a big booming city. That's all that's left. And it's awful. However, the things are being done. And right here at the college, as we've been announcing at WHFR on the air, and there might be another place in Dearborn. I know that there is a Muslim group, too, that was mentioned in the Arab American News that has taken action, and they are setting up a water collection process. But I understand their deadline is tomorrow, the 23rd. They're just going to take the bottles up right away. Well, Henry Ford College here, thanks to the Student Nursing Association, that's right, that's a student group, and also the HFC African American Association, another club, two clubs on campus have organized this. Isn't that great? We're collecting water here in our Student Center building, Building M. It's on the front of the main campus at 5101 Evergreen. You should see the big letter M for mother. And it's room 109. And apparently they've had so much response and they've had so many phone calls that we're extending the collection time. And maybe they're already going to take some water up that they have already. They're going to extend the collection time through Friday, January 29th. Now, they've already collected, according to this press release from yesterday, more than 30 cases of bottled water and more than $100 in cash. Now, they do have an HFC nursing instructor who is the advisor to the Student Nurses Association, the club. Her name is Kathy Gangarosa. And it says here it was sort of her idea for the bottled water drive. They are taking up that first batch to Flint this weekend. And then they're going to go up again next weekend. So, again, if you're coming by the campus, I think, you know, since our Student Center building is right at the front of campus, there is a visitor lot. It's gated, but there's a little intercom. So if you just, you can park there, and, you know, there's several free parking spots that are not too far from the building. You could carry in a case, if you're in good health, of course, pretty easily, and just look for room 109. WHFR, for example, is room 103. But, you know, so don't give it to us. Give it to who's ever in room 109. Probably regular daytime hours. It doesn't say here in the press release what times are. But if you want to contact Cindy Gangarosa, not Cindy, give me a break here. Kathy Gangarosa, the faculty advisor of the nursing group, her phone number about this water collection, 313-845-6366. Okay, so Kathy at 313-845-6366. If you think you can't get here with water until, I don't know, 6 p.m. or whatever. For example, it doesn't say if there's any collection tomorrow. From the press release, it sounds like she and others in the group are driving the water up tomorrow. Or maybe Sunday. So that's happening on campus. We'll keep reminding you it is something to do. And the money doesn't hurt either because, well, 100% of it, certainly if you give money to this group, it's going to go to buy more water and to get it up to Flint. But you realize, folks, they're going to need this kind of support for 15 years. Is anybody going to want to buy a new house or an old house in Flint? I imagine the property values are not doing too well at this point. Because if you don't have clean water, duh. Oh, it boggles the mind, doesn't it? And I even saw, I thought I had a cartoon with me, which wasn't funny. I'm off mic, I know. It means I'm not by the microphone. I was reaching here. But, you know, in the New York Times last weekend, there was a cartoon. Here it is. And of course, cartoons exaggerate and they make fun of people. But Snyder's in it. Yeah. Yeah. Governor Rick Snyder's, the title of the cartoon is Governor Rick Snyder's Skinflint, Michigan, City Limit. Of course, the skinflint is Rick Snyder. And so in the first panel, Snyder is looking at the water coming out of a tap, and he said, "We saved hundreds of dollars. And all we had to do was poison an entire city with corrosive leaded water." Again, cartoon, right? This is exaggeration, supposed to be funny. I'm sure he would never say this sort of thing. But this is a national press in the New York Times Sunday edition. The next panel shows him standing over a sort of like a waste dump in that area. And he's saying, "Oh, next, we'll monetize the parks by turning them into revenue-generating landfills." So there's actually a bulldozer that's filling in the park, and a kid is trying to ride a little, park toy springy animal. And so that's another Snyder idea. Yeah, let's get rid of those parks, and let's just put all the waste and trash there, and we'll charge money for it, and oh boy, we'll make money. And in the third panel, Snyder is saying, because he's at sort of like cafeteria in a school, he says, "We'll save even more by giving school lunch contracts to a desperate burrito franchise." Good, healthy food. Although, yeah, I actually think Mexican food is pretty healthy. It all depends how you make it, of course. I think a good burrito is probably more healthy than most hamburgers from most fast food restaurants. My opinion, I could be wrong, and I often am. The fourth panel shows Snyder at a car accident at a traffic light, and he says, "We'll shave a few bucks off the budget by turning off traffic lights." Of course, they would never do that. No, of course, if there's a population decline any further in Flint, maybe they won't need traffic lights, Koronick says, exaggerating wildly. The next panel, he's in a car, and he says, "We'll replace expensive paramedics with Uber drivers equipped with Band-Aids." Oops. And then the next panel, second from last, Snyder is looking at a drone flying with a fire extinguisher under it. He says, "We'll disband the fire department in favor of this contraption that I built." Hey, got a fire? We'll have a drone bring a fire extinguisher to you, and you can take care of that fire yourself. Yeah, these are all exaggerations. It's a comics. It's a satirical comic strip, folks, from the New York Times last Sunday. Nationally distributed. Okay. And the last one, he is saying in his office, "Or maybe I'll just keep imposing austerity on the poor communities that didn't vote for me," which has been a criticism here in the state of Michigan, because now the law in Michigan, thanks to our Republican legislature that voted for it, is that if the governor even suspects that a community is in economic trouble, even if they're not in trouble, even if they're not bankrupt, but if the governor says so, he has the right to put a dictator, that is, I'm sorry, as he would call it, his emergency financial manager in. And we all know how well that's worked out for the Detroit Public Schools. Yes, City of Detroit, emergency financial manager Kevin Orr did get Detroit out of bankruptcy. Well, he filed bankruptcy, first of all, which didn't have to be done immediately, but it was probably inevitable. And then he figured out a plan. But he wasn't in there to manage the city because he doesn't know anything about managing a city. I mean, all due respect, he just knows how to do bankruptcy stuff. And maybe he did that really well. A lot of pensioners would disagree. Detroit area people who depended on the fixed income because their pensions were slashed while they're already retired, with no other hope for more money. Thank you very much, Kevin Orr. There you go. So I'm just saying, is Michigan, is Flint the laughing stock of the country? Yes. And rightly so, because our government was stupid. But unlike a few of the reports, it was not the then mayor of Flint, although he was weak mayor, and he was voted out of office by the people, and now there's a stronger mayor there who went to the White House to talk to President Obama but realized she has no power either, because the emergency financial manager appointed by Governor Snyder is still in charge, the same emergency financial manager who approved the shifting of water. And even under the protest of the Flint City Council, he approved keeping it. Water from the Flint River. And he's still there as dictator. Oh, he's got to go. That's my humble opinion. I don't know how you feel, but as long as people are leaving who made these mistakes, and should some of them be prosecuted? Is it just ignorance? Is it stupidity? How can you do such a bad job for the people you're supposed to take care of? I think of our elected officials in a paternal way. They should be taking care of us in a positive parental way, not a negative one. Okay. Well, there you go. 47 minutes. Now, for those of you who listen every week, I did promise this week would be my auto show. I did. And then the person I wanted to interview, the great expert on cars, the editor-in-chief of Car and Driver magazine, Eddie Alterman, was not available. After about 14 days of trying to get in touch, it seems that their PR representative for Hearst Magazines, who works out of New York City, was on a vacation for a week. I hope she enjoyed herself. But she did try to get him, but he was booked up, even though I tried like 8 days before to get in touch with her with messages, emails, phones, and anyway. Anyway, Eddie Alderman, always a great interview, always a knowledgeable guy. Yes, he's been to the auto show. Car and Driver magazine is based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so they were down there. And we'll talk about cars exclusively next week. No, in the second half of next week. Why? Because in the first half, well, for the first, say, 10 or 15 minutes, I've got Henry Ford College big band director, band leader, Rick Goward. He's retired from full-time music department teaching a couple years ago, like yours truly, who retired from full-time telecom teaching. And but we just can't stay away from what we love and what we do best. And so Rick is going to be here talking about their new CD, proceeds of which will benefit, of course, the Henry Ford Music Department. I think it's a scholarship fund specifically that they raised the money for there. But also there's a big band bop and pop concert coming up on Saturday, January 30th. That is a week from tomorrow at 8 p.m. at the Michael A. Guido Theater in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, 15801 Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Now, that's not on the main campus of Henry Ford College. It's a big, spiffy Guido Theater at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, okay? And they're not only going to have our own college bands under Rick Goward's direction, but they're bringing in two high school bands, Dearborn High School Jazz Band and also the Utica Eisenhower High School Jazz Ensemble. So it's going to be a big jazzy evening, and individual tickets are $20 each. For more information, you can contact Rick Goward at rgoward@hfcc.edu. Okay? And you can purchase tickets by calling directly to 313-943, which is, I think this is probably the box office of the Community and Performing Arts Center. It's 313-943-2354. One more time, tickets for the Big Band Bop and Pop concert for January 30th at 8 p.m., Guido Theater. You can call 313-943-2354. Again, Rick Goward is R-G-O-W-A-R-D at hfcc.edu. So we'll have Rick Goward with us talking about that concert and also the music program in general, and the new big band CD that was recorded in Europe. Ooh, name dropper that I am. Europe, this last summer, as the big band took a tour over there and performed at many places. So we'll talk to Rick about that too. And then Eddie Alderman of Car and Driver will be calling in about halfway through, about 1:30. So the auto show will be at 1:30. What about that auto show? Okay, we got a few minutes left today on the new WHF Journal. Kitty Love and Highway 61 comes up at 2 p.m. and goes all the way to 6 p.m. tonight. The Best in the Blues on WHFR.fm, the station making waves. I know you want to stay tuned for that, unless you're listening on the podcast, in which case it'll cut off at 2 minutes after 2 and you'll miss that. But so tune in live on Fridays from 2 to 6. All right. Let me talk about the auto show. First of all, it costs $13 a person, $7 for seniors. They didn't ask for my ID. I guess I appeared very old. And children. Is it under 12 or something? Whatever. So it's a little bit pricey. And, of course, it's very expensive to park near Cobo Hall. And it's hard to park near Cobo Hall. And it's tough to walk from wherever nearby parking structure, especially in the typical Michigan winter, to Cobo Hall. So it's like one of those adventure treks, you know, that some people take. I know last weekend there was 200,000 people. My brief comments about the show, not to be disparaging, but my brief comments are that, first of all, the cheapest way to park, this is always practical, is to go all the way up to up Woodward to Grand Circus Park, and there's an underground parking structure. I think on both sides, unless they closed one of them, I can't remember. So go underground at Grand Circus Park, park your car there. It's relatively cheap, $5 maybe, And then you can ride the People Mover, which there's a stop just on the west side of Woodward there at Grand Circus. You hop on that. It costs $1 or so each way. But still, you get to ride downtown and view all the beautiful scenes of, buildings in dilapidated condition. It still doesn't look very cheerful. But the People Mover drops you right off inside of Cobo Center. And so I've done that a couple times. Remember that the People Mover, though, is not very well heated, maybe because the doors keep opening and closing. So you'll freeze to death on the People Mover unless you're fully bundled, too. Okay. Also, and I can't give a plug here, but a couple of the restaurants, or at least one I know in Detroit, they actually provide a free shuttle to Cobo and back. And I've used one of those for the last couple of weeks. And we just can't do a commercial on the air because they're. But I'm just saying, find out about that, however you can find out about it. That is a great way to do it. I got a little lunch on Tuesday, a pretty reasonably priced luncheon, and I got the free transportation back and forth. And my parking in their gated lot at the restaurant was free. So I got basically a free meal for the cost of parking at, Grand Circus and riding in on the People Mover. So that's definitely a way to do it if you can figure that out for yourself. Secondly, there's after parking, there's fewer cars down there this year. A lot of brands, and some of my favorite ones like Mini. Okay, full disclosure here, I own a Mini Cooper automobile. Okay, and I really love it. That's just an opinion. Okay, don't have to believe that. I had it for 2 years now. And Mini, which is owned by BMW, they decided not to show at the auto show this year, not to have an exhibit area. Also Jaguar, Land Rover, and some of the luxury models have almost never been down there, sometimes in special displays other than Cobo Center, for the super rich, by private invitation only, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati. Maserati was down there last year. And I always love to look at those really expensive, fancy cars. But they're not going to be there. And also Bentley, a very, very expensive sedan, is not displaying down there either. And therefore, there was a lot more space for people to walk around, which was good. And didn't seem overly crowded. I have many other opinions about the auto show. And I'll be talking next week with Eddie Alterman about my favorites. Yes, in the 4 minutes left here, I will fill with a few of my thoughts. Taking his notes out of his notebook. Okay. You might want to look at the Bolt. That's the Chevrolet all-electric car, which should be able to be bought by the end of this year. $30,000. I don't know if that's before or after all the tax credits. And a range of about 200 miles. Maybe more in good weather if you drive slow. And it's a 2017 Chevy car, and it's all electric. However, just for you USA lovers, the batteries, the motor, and the transmission in that Bolt are all from South Korea. And my feeling is if I wanted a car from South Korea, I'd buy a Kia or a Hyundai. I mean, I'd just go right to the source. Now, they don't make an all-electric car now, but they could be, or one of their smaller off side companies are maybe making the batteries, the motor, and the transmission. But that's how they make it at that lower price point, because electrical chassis for a car is still pretty expensive, especially the batteries. By the way, if you buy an all-electric car, I recommend a lease, because who knows what's going to happen when the batteries die in 3 to 5 years. Right now, the cost is about $4,000 to $5,000 to replace the batteries after they go dead, finally. Swoopiest award, the new Buick Avista. They had a Buick Avenir last year, also swoopy, although last year my swoopiest car went to a Maserati Alfiera. Yes, that's what they called it. And and Acura, which is the luxury Honda brand, you should see their concept car. Concept cars are always fun, just like that Buick Avista. It's only a concept, won't necessarily be made. But Acura has something called the Precision concept. It's a four-door, four-seat car. Excuse me. And it's got swing-out rear doors. So, you know, the front doors open the usual way, hinged at the front, and the back doors are hinged at the back. So, oh my gosh, you want to jump in the front of the back, you open both side doors. Wow, what space. I'm getting choked up here. And I think it's because the hour is over. No, I think it's Kitty Love's perfume. I think that's what it is. She's not wearing perfume. That's not it. Of course, my big question here about electric cars, why do most electric cars, all electric cars, have white interiors? I hate white interiors. Why is that? Why don't they come in some dark colors? Gee whiz. There's a my favorite best mascot award, you know, car companies, all companies have mascots, like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Well, in a similar appearance, the Michelin tire people had their Michelin man down there. It was like a big Pillsbury Doughboy with somebody inside the costume, of course, and everybody wanted their picture taken with the Michelin man. So that's great fun for the kids. Recommend that. And, of course, take a look at the new Town and Country from Fiat Chrysler America. The Town and Country will be renamed the Pacifica, and they're going to have a big-time hybrid version available for sale next year, a plug-in hybrid, in fact, and we just don't know the price on that, of course. So just a little glance. Next week will be the Auto Show here on WHFR.fm, WHFR Dearborn. So come on back. And we'll have both Rick Goward and Eddie Alderman both talking about different things on the show. We'll have fun. I'm sure you will, too. Take care out there, and send that water to Flint, if at all possible, for 15 years. Bye for now.
Stay.